Okay, let's go with step 11. And I want to read this step. I have lost a page of my book. I want to read the step because I don't want to miss any of the words. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. One of the things we're going to talk about in step 11 is praying for His will for us and the power to carry that out. And one of the things that I love in the steps is we start off in step 1, and it talks about how powerless we are. And we do this work down to step 11. And God, if we follow His directions, is going to give us the power to carry it out. And I love that, how you have to be deflated, and then we're given the power through doing this work. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works. If we have the proper attitude and work at it, it would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And I love the way it tells me in step 10, it talks about when we retire at night. And now we're going to go back into step 11, and we're going to do retire at night again. And this is like, in my opinion, it looks like Bill kind of ran the two steps together. So that tells me that maybe what I do at night is going to affect what I do in the morning, because the two steps are run together. So it tells me, and these are the questions, when I kind of ran over the questions in step 10 over here, where we were talking about, it says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. But then we go back here on step 86 in the first paragraph, and it says when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And then it says exactly what to do. And what I do is I ask myself these questions, and all I do is just read them out of the book. And I ask myself these questions. The book is right by my bed, and I just ask myself these questions. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? What did I do that day? Do I owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? And I think that one is very important, because if I'm thinking of others instead of myself, it is amazing how much time I have, how much more energy I have. Just think about that. When I'm thinking of myself, I'm just exhausted. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. One of the things that happens is I am a real alcoholic. And I am one of those kind of alcoholics. And part of my worst character defect is I beat myself up. And what I did is I had, my biggest lesson has been forgiving myself for being a child abuser. That's where I have had the biggest, I have been graced with sobriety, and I have been graced with the freedom from guilt from being a child abuser. But what would happen is I would always beat myself up. And then I would just drift into abuse all the time. And that doesn't do anybody any good. And just beat myself up. Have you ever been around anybody who says, I can't do anything right. I did this wrong. I did that wrong. I'm always afraid. I have to watch that, really, because what happens is I go right back into that depressive, self-pity, you know, wah-wah kind of feeling. Because the reason is because that's my normal nature. I get to stand here this morning and live in a state that's not my nature. This is not my nature. To be happy, positive, feeling good about the day, that is not my normal nature. My normal nature is to be negative, seeing what's wrong, find out what's not going right, that just morbid reflection. That is normal for me. So I love it that most of the time, used to, when I first got here, you know, it was, you know, I got some glimpses of being at peace with myself. And as the years have gone by, I have more and more of feeling the way I feel right now than to have to be drifting into morbid reflection. Because what happens is I am a person who has had tons of depression. And I read everything I can get my hands on of Bill W. because that's what he had. And there is nothing more disgusting than to have to be around somebody who's depressed. It is so, I mean, all it is the highest form of self-absorption. It's just all about self. Now, I am so blessed in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because there is a spiritual axiom out there that we attract what we are. Guess what flows my way? It's all these women who are depressed. And so I'm on a regular basis, I get to see how absolutely disgusting that is. It's just, and it's hard to be around people like that. It's so hard to be around people like that because they can't, when they're in that state of self-pity and depression, they cannot feel your love. They can't feel it. They're cut off. Being depressed is being totally cut off from the sunshine of the spirit. So they can't feel your love. They can't feel any of that. So what I try to do is things that were done for me. You know, get in the shower, get out of bed, go take a walk, go make 5 phone calls, and if anybody asks you how you're doing, you say today is a good day and get back to talking about them because nobody wants to hear about you. And I have, because that's who I am. And I love this altered state that we get to live in because today I get to live in this altered state of being and not be this depressed, whining, laying on the sofa, feeling sorry for myself. Nobody loves me, and taking out that hate and venom I feel for myself on the people I love the most, which were my children, and destroying their lives because my life is destroyed. And I'm no good to anybody if I'm in that state. There's nothing that I have such a hard time with my oldest son, and I mean, he is just like me, and he's not the alcoholic, but his disposition is just like mine. He's the one, I'm a person who is a cutter and have tried suicide attempts, and so is my son, and he's really negative. And I just would give anything, and every time I try to, you know, pump him up or something like that, and I've learned to mind my own business, I have Al-Anon slips so much. But what I try, you know, he says, Mom, you don't have to do that AA stuff on me. And, you know, what I've done is because I've done that for 31 years, I've just like turned him against AA because I've tried so hard to pump him up. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. He's been a huge teacher for me. I'll tell you what, he has helped me with more women I sponsor than anything else, because I love him so much, and he has struggled. His life is such a struggle, and it's really hard for me to make sure that I know he has a higher power, and what his contract is with his higher power is none of my business. It's really difficult, but I have to stay out of that morbid reflection and say, oh my God, he's like that because of me. And you know what? It's like, okay. You know, it's like I tell my women that I sponsor, you know, your parents may have, you know, all your problems may have their name on it, but all your solutions have yours. If you want to get in the solution and you want a better life, that's up to you. And, you know, I have to remember that's up to my son too. He's 48. I can't change what he's... here we go. Talk about play God in other people's lives. You know, you think, oh my God, I'm finally there. I'm walking in the realm of the Spirit. I'm letting God direct other people's lives. And 5 minutes later, I'm trying to tell somebody what to do and how to do it. And there I go, right back to that ego thing that Bob's talking about. I mean, I can go there from 5 minutes to 5 minutes. And he's a huge teacher for me, and I have to keep realizing that he keeps me aware of what I do and how quickly I go back into that, I can fix you if you'll just listen to me. And then that morbid reflection of what's wrong with you is my fault. And you know, at 48 years old, I am just not that powerful. I have finally realized that I've been sober a lot longer than I drank. I've been sober almost twice as long as I drank. So I've been sober a long time. So more of his life is my sobriety than it was my drinking. I realized that children, whatever happens in our childhood stays with us. But what happens in adulthood stays with us as well. And that way we can start to take responsibility. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness. One of the things that I have found out that the best way for me to ask God's forgiveness for me is to forgive you. To forgive you. And Bob was talking about the Bible, and I can remember when I grew up, I feel exactly how he does. I grew up Southern Baptist, a very rigid religion, and I had all kinds of ideas that I thought that happened. And I used to go to church when I'd go back to Texas with my mom. I used to go to church every Sunday with her, and I don't know what happened, but those people changed. I don't know, you know, they just don't do it the way I remember it. And today, the book talks about many of us do go back to the religion of our childhood. And I go to church today. I now practice my religion. I don't practice Southern Baptist, but I practice Christianity. I have gone back to the religion of my childhood. I don't do any of that instead of AA. None of it. My first spiritual path is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't miss meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I don't seem to have any regrets or remorse if I miss Sunday morning. So when that happens, I realize that my priorities are still in order. But for me, it's just another little bit of help in the spiritual realm. And helps me to have a relationship with God as I understand Him. And that's what it does for me. It's nothing like it used to be. I don't have those feelings that I used to have. And I really love it. It's so different. I mean, I had these preachers, you know, that were, standing up at the podium, pounding away and red face and veins sticking out. And now I go to this church with this, and the pastor has a ponytail, and he wears jeans, and he drives a Harley Davidson, you know, and it's just like, it's so different, and it's like, whew, my kind of guy, you know, and it's like, it's that to me is, you know, how we do it today. So I have a different idea. I love what Chuck says. I'm beginning to see things through a new pair of glasses. I get to have a new set of eyes, and that's fabulous. But I know that forgiveness for me is the more I can forgive you, the more I can forgive me. Oops, what am I doing? Sorry. Running around, talking with my hands. And inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And that's what I do. I just ask God, what can I do to make this better? On awakening, now this is what we do in the morning, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Now, this is, I love this statement right here, because my son James, he does a big book study. He and this guy named Don, they do a big book study in Chicago, and they go around and do this. And James had always said, he would stand up and he'd say, I really have a hard time with meditation, and I don't have any problem, you know, praying. I roll out of bed on my knees, and he says, I just say, James Lee reporting for duty. And he said, I've always had a problem with this meditating. And he got a 1935 dictionary, and of course now that he got one, I had to get one. And he said, oh, they talk about meditation in that dictionary is contemplation. And he says, there it is right here. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Let's contemplate the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. And in 1935, that was meditation. We think about the plans for the day. Well, the book tells us that more will be revealed, and the more that Eastern religion has entered into our lives and we know more about it, we've taken on different forms of meditation. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially that we be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And I do this, I ask that prayer every day, because if not, I can tell the days I forget, but I try to remember always to ask that prayer. Then I'll tell you some stuff I do. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And thinking about the day we may face indecision, we may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration. Another prayer. I used to do that at work. I do that today. One of the things that happens is when I see when I pick up my cell phone or I've got caller ID on everything, and when I see it's somebody that I sponsor, I always ask God, you know, for an inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. If I need to say something to them, let it come from Him and not me. Let it be of God and not of me. Because I want whatever I'm trying to discuss with somebody, I want it not to be of me. Because if it is, it may not be a very good suggestion. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. Now, what happens for me where it says this is that this is kind of the meditation that I do. We relax and take it easy. So I'm going to just kind of tell you what I do. And this is what I've been doing since I got sober. And nothing, I'm kind of one of these kind of back to basics kind of gal. I haven't done much different than what I did 31 years ago. Everything is pretty much the same. I read 4 non-AA inspirational books. No, that's not true, because I read a daily reflection. So I read 3 non-AA approved spiritual books. And one that I have been reading since I got sober, and that's Around the Year with Emmett Fox. And I love him, and he was so helpful to Bill with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I read him, and it just speaks to me. And I've been reading him since I got sober. I read those three books, and then I read something. I either read the Big Book, or I read The Language of the Heart, or AA Comes of Age. Those three, because I can take pieces out of them better than I can Pass It On or Dr. Bob and the Old Timers. And I read a few pages from that. And then I sit quietly, relax, and take it easy for a few minutes. Now, I'd love to tell you, I get to do this longer today. Bob said he gives himself about 2 hours every morning. Today, I give myself an hour. My husband is the two-hour guy. He's one that reads all this stuff, and then I just sit for a few minutes. I used to give myself 20 minutes when I was working. That's all. That doesn't seem like a lot of time to give God, but I gave God 20 minutes every morning. But today I do it for an hour, and I just sit and kind of relax and take it easy. And I have a prayer list, and I go down that prayer list, and from time to time I add to it, and I start saying prayers for other people, because what I'm trying to do is ask God to help others. And I have right now, there's a lot of people who are ill and that are in our fellowship. I've got a few women. I just lost a sponsee in January from cancer. I have a few others who have cancer. My sponsor is recovering from breast cancer. So there's a lot of people who've got some hard struggles. Plus, I have a lot of friends in this program that are really ill. And so I sit and I just try to ask God, you know, to wrap His grace around them for the day, because they're into some hard struggles. And so I just take it easy. And then I ask God for an intuitive thought, just like it says. And sometimes if I'm having problems with a question and what to do with something, all of a sudden, if I just kind of relax, the answer comes. I can just kind of feel the answer. And I know that I'm sitting in that place and that it's of God. Now, my husband does a lot more stuff than I do. Dave is, you know, this is funny, you guys. It's just, I have to tell you this. Dave does his meditation where he goes like, and he makes that noise. Our poor little Shih Tzu dog is in the bed, and he jumps up on Dave's chest, and he just starts ruff, barking at him as he's making these sounds. So I'm not too sure how much meditating Dave does, because we're pretty much laughing about it. But anyway, he does a lot more stuff than I do. But this is that's pretty much my morning. But most of all, it's important for me to have a prayer list of the people, because one of the things, I don't want to miss anybody, and if I don't write it down, and it seems like the older I get, the more I need to write everything down. It's because if not, I'm not going to mean to forget you, but I will forget you. What used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. And that's, again, repetition strengthens and confirms, and faith then comes naturally. We just do it over and over and over, and pretty soon what has happened is I've learned to trust the process. I've learned to just sit back and know that if I ask God to direct my actions and my thinking, that He's going to do it. That's the good news, that He's going to do it. And for me, that is such a comfort. I have learned to trust that. Nevertheless, let's go on down a little bit more. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plan of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. And then there's a prayer here that I love. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day that what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. We can easily see why. And it says here that we ask a lot of times our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. And when Dave and I retired, this was something we said, oh, this is the best thing that's going to happen, and we're going to get to do prayers and meditation together. Well, Dave and I are not on the same schedule. He is a much later sleeper than me. I get up pretty early in the morning. And I by the time he woke up, I'd already been so far into my day doing all the stuff that I was just, you know, I had just missed that place of waking up and being quiet. So today we don't get to do that. So one of the things that I want to do is go down to the bottom of the page to the last sentence in that, in the paragraph before it starts as we go through the day. It says, be quick to see where religious people are right. And that's what Bob talked about early. Make use of what they offer. I was so busy judging the religion that I grew up in. And one of the things is I judged other religions. I was born, I was raised Southern Baptist. Well, I never will forget when John Kennedy was running for president. I wonder, is anybody around here old enough to remember that? A few of you are old enough to remember when John Kennedy was running for president. And I was Southern Baptist. I want you to know that that preacher, every Sunday morning until the day he was elected president, kept telling us how horrible it would be if we had a Catholic in the White House. And I can remember. So not only was I having this prejudice and concern about and fear in the religion I was brought up in, I was being taught prejudice against all other religions as well. So it was just this bombardment. So what happened was is I turned my back on religious people. And when anybody, you know, spoke of church or God or anything like that, I could just feel what Bob was talking about. I mean, the hair on the back of my neck would stand up. And when I came into AA, I was so grateful that AA was the way it was. And I didn't understand that this was a spiritual path at first, but I knew they talked about God, but they let God be anything I wanted God to be, which was fantastic. And so today I have a different attitude. And I see where religious people were right. And then I love the next paragraph where it goes, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times during the day, thy will be done. And this is what I try to stay. There's in the Bible and what I was raised up on, and today I understand it. I fought that, but I don't fought it today. Today it says pray without ceasing. And today that's what I do. I'm constantly through the day asking God to direct my thinking and actions, praying for people, getting somebody calling me on the phone and pausing and saying a prayer. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity are foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. And that's a huge one. Because I tell you, when I'm in my head and I'm in that stress and I'm in that, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted. And you know, I have pretty much energy. I'm almost 68 years old. And I feel like I'm like, whoa. You know, sometimes the only reason I don't think I'm 30 is when I pass a mirror. And I'm like, oh, my God, who's that? You know, because that's how I feel inside. I'm energized. I have energy. I'm ready, excited to start the day. For we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Bob,
Thank you, Polly. I often think of different religions as spokes on a wheel, all going to the same hub. Just some spokes think they're the only spoke. And some spokes think that they're the only good spoke. But they're all going to the same place. And what Bill said in his story, they all kind of make sense. This was a very confusing step to me, this 11th step. And I started to try to figure it out from the book because I would hear people talk about the importance of meditation. And so I would read the book and it's, you know, it talks about prayer and meditation. Then it says we're going to give some, top of 86, we're going to give some definite and valuable suggestions on prayer and meditation. And it goes right into inventory. What appears to me to be inventory, and I don't get it. This doesn't look like meditation to me. And I thought that Bill, there was a misprint. I thought Bill should have been on the previous page. And then I looked down further on the page, and there's a couple prayers there. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking to be divorced from self-pity, etc. We ask God for inspiration, a couple prayers, but still nothing that looks like meditation to me, because I'm a child of the 70s. I know about meditation. I've chanted Om. I've chanted a Namne Yoho Renge Kyo with the Buddhists. I've done the breathing exercises. I've done all that stuff, and there's nothing in here that agrees, and this is the key word, agrees with my perception of meditation. So I threw the baby out with the bathwater. And I started doing a lot of different stuff. I had books I would read every morning. I went back to the Buddhists for a while. I did certain Christian prayers every morning. I did the prayer of St. Francis for a long time. I did the one in the 12x12, and then I found another version I like better. Instead of channel, it says instrument. I like that better. I did that for a while. I found a strong centering prayer that I still use to this day, and along with some other stuff. And it's, I am the place where God shines through. Him and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I be relaxed and free, he'll carry out his plan through me. And I would say that every morning. And I would read 60 through 63 and a lot of different stuff. And when I was sober a long time, like pushing somewhere between 15 and 20 years, a guy that I sponsor who was sober quite a while came to me and he asked me for specific direction on step 11. And I didn't know what to tell him because I'd done so many different things. And none of them was really the thing, you know. It's yeah, this is it. And it's all good, everything I did. I mean, when it says here, be quick to see where religious people are right, it's all good. The early members of AA used to use a lot of stuff, read a lot of stuff. But I don't know what to tell him. So I said to him, I said, well, why don't you just do what it says in the book? And he actually did. He actually started following the directions on page 86 and 87. And at no time at all, he seemed to be doing better than me, which I don't like. It really just bugs the crap out of me. And what was happening is he was reaping the promises of step 11, which are talked about on top of page 88, where it says we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we tried to arrange life to suit ourselves. And in the 12x12, it says very similar things. It says one, it talks about two things. One is that it's the beginning of the end of isolation. And it talks about that this is where we start to get emotional balance. And that's what I was seeing evidence of in this guy. He was changing as a result of following this direction. So I started doing it. And about that time, I discovered a passage in the 12 by 12 in step 11 where all of a sudden some of this started making a little more sense. And Bill said something in there in step 11. He said, self-examination, which would really be the first paragraph on page 86. Self-examination, meditation, and prayer when taken separately. And that's what I'd been kind of doing, as if they were separate functions. He says when they're taken separately, they'll bring about much benefit and relief. And they will. But then he says when they're logically related and interwoven, as it's talking about on page 87, framing my day with when I retire at night, on awakening, as they're logically related and interwoven, Bill says, they create an unshakable foundation for life. And what I saw evidenced in the guy that I sponsored was this emotional balance, is this is designed to better bring me to a place where on this march, I'm better carrying out the decision in step 3. That's really the goal. Matter of fact, I think that all of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are designed to help me to facilitate a decision, to carry out a decision that I made in step 3 that is really kind of against my alcoholic nature, to surrender and service. To give myself up and go help other people. It's really not it's not my nature to be that kind of guy. I'm a me first guy. Yeah, that's fine. But what about me? And to do that, and then I had the exact same experience with a dictionary that Polly had. One of the guys I sponsor had a 1913 dictionary. I since have gotten one from the early 30s in 1895, which is in the window of where Bill Wilson would have been forming his language skills. And in the 1913 dictionary, it said very much what the same thing Polly talked about. It used an example that when I saw the example, everything on this page clicked. It said, a general will meditate a war. And then I started reading the second paragraph. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. I could picture a general early in the morning before a battle, considering his plans for the day. Before he begins, he asks God, but maybe in his case, he brings his officers in. And he's trying to get some clarity on this day's march. And he's asking his officers to divorce his army from the things that don't work. Those horses are lame. Pull them out. Those cannons are warped. Those men are wounded. Pull them out. Pull them out of the fray. This doesn't work. So that he can use it, and the book says, so we can use our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane, and so would his army. Why? To facilitate. I'm asking God to divorce my thinking of self-pity, dishonest self-seeking motives. So that kind of implies something. If you do this every day, that somewhere along the line, I keep remarrying self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. Karen Garrison, have you ever heard her speak? She's funny. She talks about remarrying her husband. She says it's like taking a bite out of the turd for the second time. But I keep remarrying this stuff. And it's all self. Self-pity, dishonest from the self-centered fear and self-seeking motives. It's my default position. And so I can make this march. And I think that what it's very much like, it's the same, basically the same tools and approach that a sailor would use in sailing. If you were to go down to Marina Del Rey and you were to buy or rent the best, absolute best sailboat you could get, and you were to go to the nautical library and you do the first 9 steps of navigation to chart a perfect course to the island of Maui, no matter how perfectly you set out from Marina Del Rey for Maui, every single day the tides and the winds and the current is going to push you off course. Every single day the inclination from my default position of self is going to start pulling me back there. It always does. It just always, it's always start coming back about me again, me in the center, me, the guy I'm worried about. And so a sailor every single day must get out his compass and his sextant and whatever instruments he uses to take an honest inventory of where he's at. The book says earlier in step four, we can't fool ourselves about values, to find out honestly where we're at so that he can readjust his course back to the island of Maui. So that the next day, he finds out again, it's just a little off course. And one of the great things it says here, it says, this is not about beating yourself up. He says, we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. It diminishes our usefulness. This is not about beating yourself up for being out of line. It's by this time, if you've been diligent about these steps, you kind of get it. You're a knucklehead. I'm a knucklehead. Hey, I'm off course. Of course I am. Of course I am. Yeah. So I get back online again. I was wrong again. Yeah, I know. Not beating myself up. It's just, yeah, of course. Of course I am. And I one of the models of spiritual growth that I love is the Benedictines have a thing where they say that spiritual growth is an ever-increasing awareness of my own limitations and God's incredible generosity. Of course I'm out of line. And of course the power is still there for me. If I can move self out of the way, I can reaccess this power. These are great questions. You know, what it talked about on 84 and 85 is kind of like the in-the-moment inventory. You know, I love that line in the 12x12. It says that when... And this is the key of when you should take a spot check inventory that kind of talks about that we continue to watch for on page 84 and 85. It says when we are disturbed at all. It says it's a spiritual axiom, which means true under all conditions. When I'm disturbed at all, no matter what the cause, even though I know it's you, no matter what the reason, what the cause, that something's wrong with me. Something's wrong with me. If nothing else, I am the center of the disturbance. Isn't it? I've always thought it's unfair. When I hate people, they don't feel it. Oh, man. I think that's one of the great injustices in the world. That I am. So anytime I'm disturbed is when I do step 10. Now, this is more of structure in my life. This is spiritual structure. You take away the first two letters of the word spiritual and you have the word ritual. This is the spiritual rituals of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I retire at night, I constructively, not beat myself up, constructively, how could I have done better, constructively reviewed my day. Where was I resentful? What about in traffic? Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I afraid? I get that kind of dishonesty. Polly was talking about the other day. I catch myself all the time. It's not really dishonest, it's creative. You know, for God's sake, don't I get some literary license in my own life? I mean, you know, it's just subtle, just a little bit of an embellishment. I'm the kind of guy, I buy a new car, and I paid $39,000 $487 for it. You say, how much you pay for that? God, that car is nice, but what would you pay for that car? Oh, way over 40. There's no edge in the truth. Or if I wanted you to think I'm a smart guy and a smart shopper, I just barely $30,000. But it never occurred to me to tell the $39,487 because there's no leverage in that. And when you're secretly not enough, and you're coming from behind, you got to have leverage. You believe that old idea. Well, whatever it is, it ain't enough. So I got to have that leverage. And I go through life sometimes. I'll go to bed, and I could have been dishonest one or two, three, four times during the day. And if it's not big glaring stuff and it's not causing me pain, I'll go through these questions and just say, where have I this, that. Nah, not today. Good night. And the truth is, there's never been a day I've been alive where I haven't been and all of that. I mean, Remember, imagine a day when you haven't been selfish at all. You didn't worry about you or think about you or wonder about you. Or, I mean, come on. So what happens to me, this is my weak area. What happens to me in the daily review is stuff slips through the cracks. And I love my friend, Al-Anon says, she says, I leak God's grace until there's a vacancy again. I leak. And then what happens is if I don't catch it, all of a sudden my attitude shifted back and I'm the judgmental, uptight guy again, or I'm the self-pitying person again, or the depressed, whatever. I will shift back, and that's when I have to do a serious inventory. Whether it's a spot check thing or as I seem to end up doing about every 5 or 6 years, I do a real in-depth thing. I just did one in January took a fifth step with a friend of mine in Maui. I was over there for a couple of weeks, and I didn't really think I needed to do inventory. I wasn't really out of line, but there was a lot of people in my home group that were, so I was really doing it for their benefit. Because I'm other-centered like that. There's no end to my goodness. But I was out of line, and I started to do the resentment process, and I had a couple two-sex things on there, and I had, stuff. And I to reset my course again, because I was kind of getting over. I was out of line. I was off the beam. You know, when you're off the beam, you're just like in the pilots. It starts going wow, wow, wow. You know, only it's me. It's they're screwed up. They're screwed up. They're screwed. You know, it's kind of like that. So I had to do an in-depth thing because I'm not diligent about this. I wish I could tell you I did better with this daily self-examination. I know my life would, I'd be so Gandhi-like, you couldn't stand me, I expect, if I really was diligent with this. I don't know. And if we don't do this stuff, what happens? And if you don't take inventory, you can get so out of line you don't know it. I used to go to a lunch meeting in Vegas. It was a discussion meeting, and they started the meeting out by saying, "Does anybody have a problem?" My friend Scott calls those open, disgusting meetings. I don't know. There's some value in them. There's some great people that go to some of those groups. They're very helpful to a lot of people, but there is something weird about using AA is to solve your problems. It kind of circumvents the sponsorship process, but neither here nor there. But I would see guys a lot of times come running into the meeting and they're in immense crisis. And maybe they hadn't been to meetings regularly and they hadn't worked with a sponsor for a while. They hadn't worked the steps for a while, but they've been putting all their energy into their family and their business and all that stuff. And all of a sudden stuff's going south on them. And now they're terrorized because they're losing everything. And they're in the meeting, and the chairperson says, does anybody have a problem? And man, this guy raises his hand, and he'll dump all this stuff on the group as if he's looking for advice. If you've ever tried to get advice in an AA meeting, it's like trying to take a drink of water out of a fire hose. Everybody in the meeting will start sharing at the guy. It's you can't help it. It's like you, because he's opened the door, so everybody's sharing at the guy. Usually, halfway through the meeting, the guy can't take it anymore, and he'll bolt out of the meeting and leave the meeting spinning on his problem, and he's not even there anymore. And we lose a lot of those guys. You can get so far out that you don't even know you're far out until all of a sudden something happens to you. And the alcoholic mind and the ego, entrenched in self, the ego has to make you right. So you think you're going to the island of Maui, and all of a sudden there's chunks of ice coming by the boat with penguins on them. Now you have to convince yourself there's penguins on Maui. I know there is. Right? You have to make that right somehow. You have to justify your position. The ego clamors for justification and self-justification. That's what self does. It exists to justify itself. And I That's one of the reasons I have a sponsor. The book talks about this intuition. We ask God for inspiration and intuition, thought or decision. We relax, take it easy. I loved what Pauly said. There's one of my favorite quotes from the Bible is, "Be still and know that I am God." There was a great story from actually from New Zealand. Tate's here from New Zealand. It was I heard it years ago about these anthropologists that were down there studying these nomadic Aborigines, that the whole tribe would move from place to place and forage off the land, and these two anthropologists are following them, and they would just see that periodically the tribe would just stop. No reason. It's not a bathroom break. They're not eating or nothing. Not sleeping. They just stop. And this anthropologist goes up to the shaman, or the leader of the tribe, and says, "You know, why are you stopping?" And evidently, the shaman looks at the guy like he's a young child, and he says, "Well, of course we're stopping. We must regularly wait for our souls to catch up with us." And I think it's possible to outrun God's grace. I think it's possible to get so full of action in myself and doing and making things happen that you can actually outrun God's grace. So this daily take it easy thing, important. That's why I do 2 hours in the morning. It's not all meditation. Sometimes I'll play the guitar for a half hour of that 2 hours. But I take the 2 hours before I go into the day. And I read some stuff sometimes. Sometimes it's prayer meditation. I think about the 24 hours ahead. I say those prayers on page 86 and 87. It says there's a warning here. It says, being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. I'll tell you something. I'm almost 30 years sober. I am inexperienced. When you think, look at it objectively. If I looked at how much actual parts of my life I've listened to of the God within me and how much I've listened to my head, I'm telling you, my head's still way ahead of the game. I'm still inexperienced at this. And because of that, it says if we presume to be inspired by at all times, we're going to pay for that presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. I have a sponsor. I sponsor guys. I tell them, I said, "You get really inspired by God, call me. If it's a big inspiration, come and see me." Because the ego, the greatest trick it has is to convince you it's not there. And the ego is so subtle, it will use even spiritual principles. It will use the steps. It will use the traditions. It will use the book to self-grandize itself. One of my favorite stories, I've been up in the Oakland area, and I know a guy that survived this. Is the story of Jim Jones. Jim Jones had a born-again experience. He got saved. He was an alcoholic and a drug addict. Got saved, got a calling, went into the ministry, became a minister, started helping a lot of people, and he did. You go up to Oakland this day, you'll find people that will praise him for what he did in that community. Jim Jones didn't have a sponsor or anybody to check his inspiration with except the mind of a chronic alcoholic. And he got sicker and sicker. If he had a sponsor, you know the sponsor would have said, "Jim, the Kool-Aid's a bad idea." And he did all of that believing he's doing God's will. And that's the same can happen. The next paragraph, it talks about only. We pray only for knowledge of his will for us. In the religion of my childhood, we had a commandment that says, "I shall not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain." The vainest, what's the vainest thing I can do? Pray for my will. Anyway, let's take a break. 10 minutes. Thank you. Everybody's right.